You are listening to the Massive Report Podcast, your complete source of information, news, and analysis of your awesome town crew.
Open wide for some soccer!
You're looking at now, sir. Everything that happens now is happening now.
What happened to then?
We passed then.
When?
Just now. We're at now now.
Go back to then.
When?
Now.
Now?
Now.
I can't.
Why?
We missed it.
When?
Just now.
When will then be now?
Soon.
This club, and any sports franchise for that matter, should be a sacred community asset. That is how we're going to treat the crew. Our goal will be to take the crew to be one of the standard bearers in the league.
And look at the Nord deck there. Crew faithful, ever so loud. Yeah, buddy!
Well, this is different than it was a couple of weeks ago. The crew winning again in front of a sold-out crowd. Again. Where am I? I'm so scared. Welcome into the Massive Report. My name is Matt Goschert, joined this week by Nate Beckman, Chris Lamacchia, Greg Benson, and Sam Fahmy, who's hitting a bunch of buttons over there. And I'm actually a little disappointed we don't have a click track now, Sam. Can we start this over with the click track? Is that cool?
No.
Oh, okay.
Fine. I'd like to point out that Ethan Finley just scored.
Nice.
On this podcast.
On the podcast now. He just
happened.
You just...
Just happened.
Oh, that's why I walked out of the women's room. That makes sense.
Oh!
Hey-o, drink!
Wait for it!
No.
Nope, not even.
Fair enough.
Wait for it slightly longer than usual.
You were 10 minutes.
So the crew make a short work of the Montreal Impact by a score of 2-0. First goal comes, what was it, a minute 58 in?
Yeah.
I think it's when it, what it said, at least when I...
Somebody on the television said that it was the fastest goal in crew history, but I really, really doubt that.
It was at least the fastest goal this year.
Yes.
I can get behind that.
Yeah, it was the fastest goal this month.
Other than that, I'm going to have to call Matt Bernhardt and rely on his expertise because I have no clue.
No clue at all.
That's not a thing that I know. Hell of a goal, though.
Yeah, it was a great goal.
Beats him topside and carries that momentum into the second half, where according to Montreal's manager, Mr. Franck Hopeless. Hopeless? Hopeless? Is that it? The, quote, weakest penalty call that he's ever seen. I don't think he realized it was not called on the guy who was attacking the guy with the ball. Because if you looked at the actual foul that was committed, it was a pretty blatant point to the spot, and let's do this. It was a pretty blatant yellow card, too, quite honestly.
It's not very often that the coach is the one that gets called ball watching.
Yeah. That's really what happened there, in my opinion. What do you think, Nate? What do you think of the match, first of all? Let's talk about that to get started.
I think Ethan Finley... Let me scoot up here or something. This doesn't sound right. Ethan Finley's a crazy person. Like, I loved it. I don't know if I didn't normally get to see all of his runs...
Yeah,
watching the game through my trip to Canada, which I usually do in my living room when I want to watch home games. But he is okay. All right, we're in. So no, he put himself.
Hold on.
There we go. Sam came prepared tonight, folks.
He puts himself in harm's way constantly, or at least he did this weekend. He threw his body out in front of balls that he knew he probably wasn't going to be able to control, but he could just mess with. The Montreal player that was attacking
Toronto.
It, I was. That's right.
Mississauga,
and
actually.
It was so refreshing to see that. It was exciting to see somebody just so. He was kind of like Ryan Friel, the old Reds player, throw his body into the into harm's way constantly. And I just appreciate that as a fan, and I hope he stays around forever.
Yeah, that's a good point. Also, Mississauga like Toronto's Reynoldsburg, so really not that not that far away.
Okay,
just
fair enough.
Are there teachers on strike?
Potentially.
That's right. That one.
Oh yeah, look at that, I got one too.
Chris, your thoughts on the match?
Okay, so I have to say this. Does anybody else remember the days of 2013 when the Columbus Crew would sell out the stadium and then stink the joint up?
Yes,
and everyone would run away.
I am so
glad that doesn't happen anymore, that we're winning for a change in front of you guys. So that's my first thought. My second flart. Your second flart?
That's not your second.
My second thought is that I'm going to say this. Holy crap, Tony Chung.
Yeah.
It's about freaking time that he learned how to play the game. And I realized that... Yes, exactly. Exactly. Tony Chani has finally taken ownership of his role in singing praises to that holding midfielder spot. Now, whether or not Tony Chani is the second coming of Brian Carroll, that is yet to be determined. But as I was watching this match, I was thinking to myself, will Tony Chani be protected in this? You think that he will?
I do.
I think at this point, yes. Yeah. See, he's earned that over the course of the season.
They protected him four years ago when Montreal was coming into the league. They'll protect him now.
So that you know, I agree that he will be protected. But that, and I realize I'm getting off topic here, so you can smack me if you want to. That raises a very interesting question. Given the 11 players that this team has, which 11 guys do you protect? I realize we're probably going to talk about this later, but that was my main thought from this match, was that we're playing so well right now, it's going to be hard to let anyone go. Because you got to let a Justin Meerum go unprotected, or an Ethan Finley. If you protect one, you got to protect the other. Then that leaves Bernard Renoir, Eric Gehrig. God, I hope that someone picks up Tyson Wahl if we leave him unprotected, but, you know, whatever, that's a whole different story. Also, speaking of Tyson Wahl, how many times is it going to take that guy to realize that playing defense is about defending goals and not, I don't know, giving them up? I don't know. Thank God for Steve Clark and his trailing hand.
Oh, yeah, that was nice.
That was insanity.
That was beautiful.
Big props to my friend Mark, who started the Steve Says No chant before Steve said no, and then sure shit, Steve said no. And then Anthony Brecourt was all like, ooh, Steve says no. Yeah, let's tweet about that.
Right now, apparently, Anthony Precourt is just retweeting Bad Banana.
I don't know what that is, which means that I'm old, so let me go run to the Twitters real fast.
Greg, while Chris runs to the Twitters because he's old, let's get your thoughts on the match.
Perfect segue, Chris, because I wanted to talk about Steve Clark.
Oh,
because
you did?
Yeah, I did, and I still will, because Steve Clark is, for my money, the player of the season so far for the Crew, and that's... For the number of guys who have stepped up, we talk about Chani, we talk about Finley, we talk about Meerum. Steve Clark has been the guy. I mean, standing between, how many times has he stood between a potential tie or a loss and what we saw on Saturday night? Penalty aside, they're still not going to win the game if it's 2-1 versus 2-0. I want to go back to this. I said this on Twitter last night during the LA-New York game. 44 days have passed since Gyasi Zardes scored for the LA Galaxy at Columbus Crew Stadium. He was the last non-Crew player to score in that stadium a month and a half ago.
Yeah, 13-1
in
the last five games.
13-1 over those games. And
that's just a score the Cleveland Browns can be proud of.
The score the Cleveland Browns
by.
I mean, Glifo math, you know.
One more for good measure.
Try it again, Sam. There you go.
There we go.
We rehearsed this before we go on.
God,
really?
Yes.
No.
Actually,
seriously.
I just happened to, while you said that, I happened to look at.
Yeah, I was asking. You said
salary?
For your money. Is your money $135,000?
Not really. No.
That's his salary.
That's his salary.
Oh, that's a.
That's the
steal of the year.
Best $135,000.
That's no kidding. Did we get Steve
after Giancarlo?
Did we get Steve Clark on QVC at like 2 a.m? Is that
I got it?
Hey, you know what? That's where we.
Speaking of Giancarlo, his salary was $176,000.
That's a lot lower than I expected.
Less than just, we thought it was.
Well, wait. Norway must have been just on sale in general because that's where we got both of this.
The entire country is on sale. Except you can have a piece of Norway right now.
Wow.
But no, I. The only thing that bothers me about this result is the two poster, the missed chance.
Oh my God!
Freaking Bernardo Renoir.
Hey, Bernardo Renoir. By the way, I have a personal beef with this because, as I recall, last week on the Massive Report, I predicted 3-0, and that was two coats of paint away from being 3-0.
I thought you were going to say Tim Cahill predicted it when you were 5.
Tim Cahill did predict 2-0. By the way, but still, just all around, it could have and maybe should have been more than 2-0.
And that. Goal or non-goal plus the non-goal at the other end when Steve Clark stopped the penalty kick, they could end up in play when you talk about the goal differential being the second tiebreaker. Yeah. You know, at the end of the year, yeah. It's going to be close. It's going to be close to figure out who has second or who has probably second, third, fourth, fifth, and is out of the playoffs. I think all of those are going to be really close, and you know, wins might not make it as far as our first tiebreaker. We're not necessarily way up on wins, especially. I mean, New England has a bunch. Mm-hmm. They didn't tie as much. We tended to tie more games, so you know. We'll see, but hopefully that doesn't come back to bite us.
Yeah, I agree. So we're looking at this match, obviously, and we'll be talking next segment a little bit more about the playoff push. The Crew right now, though, one win away potentially from second place.
Holy crap.
Yeah. I know.
If you would have said that to me in June, I would have smacked you in the mouth.
You know what? I got to say something about that.
Yeah.
Imagine if that 10-game stretch that was just downright awful in the middle of the season.
1-16, I think.
Yeah,
that was.
One win in 16.
1-16. Imagine if we would have won like just half of those games.
But wait,
just
wait,
half of them.
Even two more.
No, guys.
We could be talking supporter shield here.
No. Let's think about this logically. And I know that hindsight is 20/20. But everybody sitting around this table drinking cold beers at Hendox on a Monday night, and everyone who can hear my voice right now knows that the MLS playoff structure favors teams who get hot late.
It's true.
And if you win, five in a row?
What do you think
happened in 08? If you win, is it five in a row now?
Yeah.
You take home the Tiffany Cup because it was made by Tiffany. And I think that I would rather have this team go that 1-16 stretch in May and June, April, whatever it was, and then get hot and make that huge playoff push and capture the hearts and capture the hearts and minds of this city, then win five more games in May and peter out at the end of the season.
Yeah. I was explaining the Crew season to a somewhat non-soccer guy today, and I'm like, yeah, you know, it's kind of like an act playing three acts. You know, the first came out of the gun, lots of storyline, new coach, you know, did well. Then we sucked for like half the season. It was just pathetic. We were the worst team in the league if you take just those 16 games, probably about a 20-game stretch.
Yeah.
Then we came back, and it's like straight upwards.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, oh, so it's like Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi, basically. Like, you know, it's all exciting, and then you get a lot of complications. And then it ends on the, you know,
Disney signs J.J. Abrams to make the sequel.
Yeah. Did you see the thing about David Fincher potentially?
What?
Talking about, they approached him. It didn't work out. He said no. Go on the Verge. There's a story about it and about how dark it is. Fincher basically saw Star Wars as a story about the droids, about R2 and C-3PO, and about how it's like them watching man's folly.
Let's be honest here. You're only interested in that because David Fincher always has Trent Reznor do his music, and you're a huge...
That doesn't hurt, but Fight Club was like my favorite movie for a while.
Yeah, okay. Fair
enough. I have one question, though. If we're drawing parallels, is Crew Cat going to be replaced by Crew Ewok?
No. Crew Cat will be...
Crew Walk.
Crew Cat will be replaced
by Kuru. We already Kuru. Decided
yeah,
this.
Yeah, we have decided this.
I think you bring up a good point. Does Crew Cat stay if the construction guys go?
Oh, wait, you mean for the rebrand on October 8th?
Yeah.
Well, he's going to have to get a different hat. You know?
Crew Cat will have to have a different hat.
I will bring one point up, and I'm really hoping. I know Anthony Precourt listens to the show.
He religiously
loves
Pink Floyd.
Yes, huge Pink Floyd fan.
And he loves it.
New
he
album.
Loves it when you call an ace.
New Pink Floyd album in November. Go on.
Yes. But
really?
I brought this up at the tailgate, and I had three or four bottles chucked at me, but it is a true statement. We haven't won an MLS Cup since they got rid of the Cruisers.
Yeah, that I'm pretty confident will get you.
Sam, can we pause this while I go pick my jaw up off the floor?
No. Hold on. I've got something better.
Oh, God.
Here we go.
Oh.
Well,
where is it? Oh, there it is.
Yeah,
this was so bad I wasn't even prepared for
So
that
the
one.
Moral of the story is that cheerleaders equal cups.
Yeah, no, totally.
Well, yeah, obviously. That's kind of the point.
16 girls, one cup.
Cool.
Oh, no.
I don't know. The Chivas had goat girls, and they just killed that franchise.
Houston has the Dynamo girls, and look at them. They're just,
Yeah, sure. No, that's fair.
Oh,
they're
the Dynamo girls. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a fan.
Oh.
Yeah.
Send your rocket into space.
In deedly doo.
Those are all my exes living in Texas.
Oh, what did you quote in country songs?
I don't know. I spend enough time at Hen Docks now that I hear just about everything on the jukebox that you can
sad
possibly imagine.
Sad slide whistle.
Speaking of Hen Docks.
What?
Speaking of.
I love this place.
That's all you're saying?
That's all.
$2 drafts every Monday night, folks.
Yeah, yeah.
By God. Where else in this town on campus can I drink a $2 Magners pint?
I just had a Guinness.
I'm drinking
for $2.
Guinness. $2.
$2. That's less than the cost of parking in the Short North.
There you go.
Yeah.
Hey.
Dang.
Take that.
That's all right. True. So last thing we'll talk about real quick, and then we're going to head to our first break.
So we can all refill our glasses.
Yeah, because some of us like to take breaks during the show. And talk.
We have things to discuss.
We have things to discuss.
Matt and I are going to go.
We do our best talking in the off times.
Yeah, exactly. Chris and I have to fight with lightsabers. The crew sell out a match on the same night. I know this is a refrain we've heard for a little bit. We got to address this.
The crew really sell
out a match on the same night that Ohio State has a home game that's also sold out.
Yes.
Largest crowd in OSU history.
Yeah, exactly.
There were 108,000 citizens of Franklin County.
It's kind of easy to do now with expanded seating.
Well,
I did see the one thing I will give the 11 Warriors guys who plugged a couple of our things.
Yeah, yeah. The 11 Warriors guys are big fans of the show.
Awesome dudes. But I love the poster that they had for the UC game, which was just. It was just a very like line art drawing, and it was just a picture of this the UC bus driving up 71. And all it said, it didn't even have the picture of the billboard, but it just said, "Hell is real." Right. That was it.
Because anybody who's driven 71 has seen that. Yes. Yeah.
But then below it, it just said, the Ohio State University of Cincinnati, Ohio Stadium, whatever. Yeah, yeah. You know, but it was like a concert poster, and it was fantastic. I want to know where
I really
can
get
one.
No, but
I'm not a football fan at all. I'm not really a Buckeye fan, but that was an amazing poster.
No, that begs... God, I'm so loud. I'm so sorry. That begs the question, though. Has the crew finally captured a segment of the Columbus sporting population?
I think they've captured a slice of the core segment.
A slice of the core sports fan base?
Well, yeah.
What I want to see is what happens when the Jackets have a game, Ohio State has a game, and the crew have a game.
Oh, what about an Indians
playoff? That's like my personal nightmare. I don't have enough hours.
That's
Sam can't clone himself, and that involves three cameras.
And the tribes in the World Series against the Reds.
Okay, now you're just talking crazy.
So now you're talking Armageddon.
Yes. My buddies and I created a shot.
Well, that's not possible. Bengals, Browns, Super Bowl.
Yeah, it's not possible.
Yeah, that involves the Browns being in the playoffs.
It involves the Browns winning a game.
It's actually more likely.
We're waiting. My buddies and I created a shot for the days that Ohio State and the crew and the Blue Jackets all win on the same day.
Yeah.
It's called the Columbus Triple. And you take like a vodka base and then you put in something blue for the Blue Jackets, which is Curacao, something red, I think we put in, you know, grenadine for the Buckeyes. Mm-hmm. And for the crew, we put in like your favorite energy drink, as long as it's yellow. And you just... You know, wait till they all three win. When they all three win, you're like, ugh, because it's not very good.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Columbus Triple.
All right, guys.
Can't happen this year, though.
Let's go to the break. We're going to come back from the break, and we're going to talk playoffs with Nate. We're also going to talk a little Chives. That's on the way next. This is the Massive Report.
Love to be, but all my exes live in Texas.
We're back, segment two. This is the Massive Report. My name is Matt Goschert.
Happy 20th anniversary to that album, by the way. I just thought I'd point that out.
Wow. Now I feel old. Thanks.
Yeah.
Appreciate that.
Wow. Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
It was. Yeah. Oh, Deliverance, Corrosion of Conformity.
Greg was 33 when that album came out.
Yeah. No, I just felt it.
When CD1025 does those backtracks now, and they're always like, this album is now 30 years old. I'm like, ah. Oh. Every
yeah.
time.
It's, it's very unsettling.
Thanks,
yeah.
Leslie James.
Damn you, Leslie James!
Hey, don't talk about my lady like that.
That's fair. That's fair. Are we going to Forecaster first, or are we going to do the, Chivas thing first?
You know what? Let's go to Forecaster
first. All right, let's go to the Forecaster.
All right.
It's time to prepare you and you for the future.
This is a forecast, so...
The forecast for the weekend.
When you look at things in a whole, you know, the season is peaks and valleys.
Folks, I think it's time we look into the future.
All right, this time we're going to start at the end. The poll in this week's forecaster was, do you think the Crew will make the playoffs? 77% of the respondents said yes. We got about 50 votes, so... pretty confident here. The fans are pretty confident. It's not going to be easy, but I also do think we're going to make the playoffs. This week was obviously a good set of results. Crew won. That was key. A couple other teams didn't fare so well.
Thanks to those 11 Seattle fans that were just being dicks on SB Nation.
What's that?
The people who said we aren't going to make the playoffs.
They did?
It's the 11 Seattle fans just being dicks on SB Nation.
Oh, right.
That's my
right.
assumption.
Yeah.
That's,
they're yeah. always true. That they're dicks. one thing about last weekend's games, I thought that New England beating Kansas City was bad on Friday night, but really, when I took a look at it again, Kansas City's fallen apart. So
now six to their last seven.
Yeah, something like six out of seven,
yeah.
And now I'm thinking they're finally to the point where they're going to have to struggle for a playoff spot just like everybody else. I still think they will. Make the playoffs, but second, third, fourth, fifth could be any of those spots. And I like seeing them struggle. I dislike the team in general. So
what we wouldn't give for a game against Kansas City in these last four games of the season, and how often can we say that?
You know, think about in terms of the rebrand and how we've looked at Kansas City and blah, blah, blah. What if we got fourth, they got fifth, they came here and we beat them, like right after our rebrand. Bank them. Amazing.
I'd be a fan of any wins in the playoffs. Yeah, considering I haven't seen one of those in a long time. So
So that was kind of my wrap up from last weekend. There's more in the article. Obviously in fourth now, but to me that's a little deceiving. I would love for us to win out, get 55 points. I don't necessarily see that happening. Even as well as we're playing, New England's also really hot right now. We're going to their home. We got to play on weird turf. Jermaine Jones, I would expect to play the entire game this time. And when we beat New England recently, you know, he only played 30 minutes or something. So and it did change the game when he hit the field. So,
but again, Tony Chani kind of owned him.
He did. And I like the story afterwards when they talked about the Tony Chani hangover. That was the Revs.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, it's a new level for him when he's already in the minds of our opponents.
Who ever would have thought that Tony Chani
would
be in the mind of Jermaine Jones? I mean, the man is married to the Miss Universe contestant from Germany.
Really?
Tony Chani is?
Yes, Tony Chani. Oh. Jones.
Tony Chani is now. He stole her.
Yes.
Makes sense. Yeah.
He stole her from Jermaine Jones.
That's what happens.
He steals a lot of balls.
No.
A lot of 50-50 balls. 50-50 balls. Anyway.
Yeah, okay. Fair.
So, moving on. I have the Crew still in fifth place at the end of the year, but, you know, hopefully I'm wrong. If we steal more than, like, one or two points on the road, we get one road win and come home and take care of Philly at home in the last game of the season. We could be looking at fourth. It could be looking at third. It's going to be close.
Yeah, and for those,
I like how you think.
For those of you, I do want to point this out because I saw this a little bit on Twitter today. For those of you who are complaining about the fact that we always play, or that the last couple years we've played three games on the road at the beginning of October, it happens every year. It's in the contract. It's the reason we have a stadium.
Yeah, right.
It's
either play three games on the road at the end of the year or three games at home at the beginning of the year. And I really don't want to be playing soccer
soccer in Ohio in
it's a quarter horse Congress.
Attendance in that in the early part of the year is bad.
It is.
So
it is.
Even without the Steve Cirque tax day rule, I still don't want to be playing at home in April.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I agree.
So we've got I'm actually thinking that a lot of the teams in the East are going to clinch the weekend of October 11th. So this coming weekend, not a lot will happen. I think Chicago will get offed once and for all. But, you know, it'll be an interesting – and just, you know, like we said before, after the New England game this weekend, we got Philadelphia away and then 2 weeks later back at home. That's going to be brutal. I mean,
so
that's going to be a great rivalry.
What you're saying is I should take Mr. Tom Andre to the game in Philadelphia is what you're
Absolutely.
Saying.
Absolutely. You should go to
Philadelphia. That's how the money, that's how the money should be spent.
I like that name, Tom Andre.
Tom Andre right there.
I don't know.
Friend, friend of the show.
Two first names? You can't trust somebody with two first names.
Friend of the show. No. Check out a Slap on Titan. It's his
Slap on Titan?
Is that a
dildo?
Titan. It is a dildo. It's a giant dildo.
This is the most PG-13 show.
Yeah, exactly.
So, all right. So who do we root for next week? Chicago over Philly. That's on Thursday night. Once again, all these games at separate times.
It's so
like
dirty.
They just want
about that.
To make you watch
wait,
every single
wait,
game.
Wait. I have to root for Chicago?
Yeah.
You do. DC over Sporting Kansas City. That's Friday night.
Just think of it like fantasy football.
I'm gonna get
sometimes
a whole bunch of angry.
Right.
A whole bunch of angry.
Right. Just pick,
there's
pick
a reason I don't
player.
Draft Packers players, Sam. I
are there any players in Chicago that we can get behind?
No,
not coming to mind.
I was about to say McGee is good fun to follow on Twitter, but he's not even playing. So.
I can't even think of team that guys on Philly that I want to root against. I like a lot of the Philly players.
Sebastian Letou might come to my wedding.
Sebastian Letou is somewhat hurt. You need to find out what's going on with him because he came out of the game with
sending text message
ankle El Spreno.
Okay, Google contact.
Sending text message from watch now.
And pretty important if he's gone for the year. He's gone for the year.
You never go full Dick Tracy.
Anyway, it would be good for the trip.
But
because Sebastian Letou just scores goals. Houston over New York. That should be easy. That's a Saturday afternoon at 6 o'clock start time. The Crew are 90 minutes later, so you have enough time to kind of get it on or get the
get
game
on.
You do have time to
get
do
it
the
out.
Tape put it in the background
get
game.
Get it on in 90 minutes? You're overestimating.
It's a background game is what I'm saying.
Wow.
Yeah, you don't want – I mean, I think that's going to be a pretty ugly one. But
I just want
that's
to give
what,
out.
Exactly
I,
what she said.
I just want to give out a shout-out to Stumbles McGee that just walked past the window there. That was pretty fantastic. Wow.
Record.
Hey, where is that game being played, the Houston-New York game? Is
that one's in Houston.
Tijuana. Houston.
So the surface of Mars.
Is it in Houston? Let me double check
on
that one. I thought it was.
The webpage?
Yeah. That's on a different page. Then the Galaxy over TFC. So if you didn't catch the Galaxy last night, completely dismantled New York. New York, a team that like kind of limped into their CCL game midweek in El Salvador. They got beat there. They're out of the CCL. And then they come up to L.A. and they got beat 4-0. So hopefully L.A. can kind of continue that. They take out TSC. That'll really help the Crew's effort there. If we win, the best-case scenario, we could be in second next weekend. Worst case, we would be tied for fifth and actually sixth because we would lose the tiebreaker to Toronto.
Yeah.
And my guess I have is coming in fifth. At that point, at the end of the weekend. So hopefully I'm wrong and we end up in second.
Fair enough. Thanks, Nate. Appreciate it. Let's go into this. Major League Soccer has not announced yet. ESPN FC and a couple other news organizations as well announcing that Chivas USA will shutter the doors for at least 2 years to rebrand, repair, and scrub all the goat poop out of their locker room. I don't know. I mean, seriously. This is kind of big. This is the first. It's not real contraction, but it is kind of in a way because, I mean, it's at least contraction for 2 years. It's gonna at least even up the divisions next year.
Yep.
My guess with that is that Houston's going to get kicked to the west. Kansas City will stay in the east. With that, because Houston's got a little bit more chance of a rivalry with Dallas, I think it makes more sense to stick them in the West than it does to stick Kansas City in the West.
I think, wouldn't both move? So they're at 9 now, and they go down to 8. They both move over, and they have 10, and then the East would
You are correct. No, yeah, I'm, and then are, I just am over. Not...
Well, it
there's,
was...
There's the Gleefo
math. I was thinking
again.
With... Yeah, no, it's Gleefo math. Sorry about that.
Okay.
Yeah, it's my one screw-up.
If we play KC less, I'm all for it.
Yeah,
know?
No, that would definitely stick Kansas City in the West. Yep. I was thinking the other way around. I was thinking they'd still have 9 for some reason because I'm stupid. But no, that's definitely going to do it. It's going to be 10-10 then.
Yep.
With Hotlanta and New York coming in.
Orlando.
Excuse me, Orlando. Hotlanta coming in 2017 when Chivas is allegedly supposed to come back. Which would be interesting.
Which would keep the divisions even.
It would. However, we still have this phantom Miami team.
Well, yeah. The LA 2 team is phantom to me. I mean, the ownership group has not been announced. No. I'm kind of surprised they didn't, they didn't just contract as opposed to... So they kind of.
Why don't they just move
they
to
They did the
Sacramento?
Same thing with Miami. Mm. They promised them a team, but they didn't really... They don't have a plan yet.
Yeah.
Miami has what? They don't have a stadium...
They have a David Beckham.
I think, yeah, that's what's going on with Chivas is that it's the whole stadium thing is that giving them 2 years possibly might get them to get a plan for the stadium. But then you have a team like Sacramento going, oh, look at us. We already have a stadium plan. Look, we just won a major trophy.
Won USL Pro.
No, yeah. we're like Orlando City. We're kind of ready to go. You just have to say when.
Yeah, according to ESPN FC, the club is expected to go dark for a minimum of 2 years until the new undisclosed ownership group can plan and build a new stadium for the team. MLS has confirmed that the land in Exposition Park, where the LA Sports Arena sits, as a potential site for the new venue. The time period will also allow the club to be rebranded with a new name.
LA Sports Arena.
So my question for the world is, why does it take 2 years to rebrand? And in what world does it take 2 years to build a stadium? Other than Lamar Hunt's world, when he did it in, 9 months?
Yeah.
Right. Well, but that was like a rector's own.
Yeah, and he also wrote a check for it. In what world can you get public funding and a stadium built inside of 2 years?
Right.
That's a good question. And I'm actually Googling because I don't even know. It's that arena.
Which one? The one it's, that...
Oh, right next to the LA Coliseum. It's that one that nobody plays
in. Is it the one where they have the X Games every year, but nothing else ever happens there?
Near USC. That's not a terribly fashionable part of town, but it's sort of central. I mean, it's way more central than Carson.
LA. No, it is definitely LA. It's
yep.
Yeah, it's the place where all of the teams used to play.
Except for the Dodgers.
The Lakers,
right?
The Clippers, the Kings.
I think the Angels may have had an exhibition there at one time.
Yeah,
but I mean, if they demolish it, it doesn't matter. It's
just
a plot of land.
I don't know if they're
going
to demolish it, if they're going to add to it, but it still doesn't make sense. 2 years isn't...
Well, you can't just
make
not add to it.
Well, 2 years is either too much time or not enough time.
But you can't add to it. It's a basketball and ice hockey arena. You can't drop a soccer
about the
pitch
land.
In the middle.
The land.
Okay, the land. No, yes. there's no other land there.
Oh, really?
I mean, they
so
would
you,
have
you
to
tear down the arena.
So you'd have to
because it's LA Coliseum is right there.
Oh,
and so you're not gonna.
But
you're
still,
not,
2 years is not enough time to do that.
Yeah, no. It
2 years
really
is
isn't.
Too much time to rebrand, but not enough time to build a stadium on a spot where there's an existing structure that's probably owned by LA taxpayers.
Well, it's going to take eight months to get approved, and then you're behind your deadline, and then you're playing in, back in the home.
You're playing back in the
for 6 months to a year, whatever it is.
Yeah. And then your NYCFC. Well, and then your NYCFC still looking for a home because you want to play inside LA city limits, but by God, we can't find any land to build a stadium.
You know what happens. Is that after those 2 years, they say, never mind.
Yeah.
That is the plot of land right now. I'm showing a visual to the people on
that's
the panel right
radio,
now.
That is
the plot of land that this
right
arena sits on.
It's fascinating. Can you just screenshot that and tweet
is
it
that,
just for everybody?
Right beside the 405.
The 110.
That's a good idea.
Okay, so
literally
it's
right off of the 110.
So that way people who are stuck in rush hour traffic will be the people that buy season tickets. It's like, why am I going to go home? Let me just stop and watch a soccer game real fast.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Yeah, I mean, it's actually a pretty good marketing play in LA.
You could fill the stadium if you just had people to take the exit.
Going to totally take away parking from USC home games.
Everybody you're going to get is literally going to be a walk-in,
or they're going to
just
play,
because they're lost,
or they're
going to
play,
there?
Or they're going to play on the pavement, so that during USC home games they can still park cars there.
MLS has one club that plays futsal, and that's going to be it.
So, it's actually it's gonna be completely paved, and everybody gets to play on rollerblades. It's gonna be fantastic.
Wow, I'd like to see that.
But it's kind of like playing in Seattle.
How do you even brand that team? Like, you're going up against the Galaxy, which
the
are
Trojans.
MLS is like, you know,
telling
Galacticos
you.
Type team, and they're always going to have three giant stars and everything. Are you going to be the common man type team?
No, you're not going
to
be the.
Are
New
you
going
to try to be the other?
Are you going to be the Clippers to the LA Galaxy's Lakers?
No,
right?
No. What you need to do is you need to move to San Diego or Sacramento.
Yeah,
and, you know, you could call it the LA Accessible My Mass Transits.
It boggles. The LA buses.
There's a light rail stop like right by the stadium.
It boggles my mind that everyone who watches and pays ticket and pays to attend games sees that you can't make two teams in LA work, but the people who sign the checks and run the league think that no, we got to have two teams in LA.
Yeah,
right.
No, you don't have to have two teams in LA. You have one huge club in LA.
Yeah,
and then you have another club either in San Diego, Sacramento, some other California metropolitan area.
Yeah.
I don't understand why Don Garber and Nelson Rodriguez are dead set on ruining, because no matter what happens and no matter who purchases this LA 2 team, it's going to be Chivas. It's going to be Chivas all over again. Low attendance, low payroll, kind of a mediocre team that, you know, doesn't do anything huge on the field, blah, 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 blah.
I mean, the only thing that you could do in that situation is maybe move it somewhere, try to find somewhere, you know, near the Rose Bowl or somewhere just so far north.
Move it to Burbank.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's somewhere really,
but
really
even still,
north
of
Los Angeles that is completely a different city.
That L.A. metro area.
Or San Diego.
Yeah, right. And that's why I'm saying San Diego.
Yeah.
Move it to San Diego.
If
you want to have a second team in Southern California, San Diego makes way more sense than trying to force two soccer teams. Forgive me here for being honest. Than trying to force two soccer teams on the LA metro area.
Right.
Yeah. It makes sense to me. I mean,
but hey, we don't matter because we only fund the league. We don't make any decisions.
It's totally true. Yeah. All right, we're gonna come back and bitch about the league some more. Greg's gonna talk a little bit in a few minutes. This is the Massive Report.
Stick.
Sometimes he uses his fists. He's filled with anger and filled with rage, and tells me I smell like piss. His drink, Jimmy B, his chaser of beer. After that, various alcohols. That's when the beatings get so severe. I sleep, I pray. Don't feel sorry for me. Things weren't always this bad. Why, when I was a young talking goat, the old man was just like my dad.
If you are one of those fiends who just can't wait until next Monday night for your weekly fix of laminated papers, shoot up, junkies, because it's time once again for Cards Against Insanity. Opinions are mine and not those of the Massive Report or the Columbus crew, and all contestants receive these lovely gold-plated Cards Against Insanity pendants. May turn your skin green after a couple days, wouldn't wear them myself. Formalities done, here's who's getting card stock in their face. Yellow card to Sky Sports in England, who, on a weekend that featured North London and Merseyside derbies, yes, Chris LaMacchia, derbies, decided to make their Super Sunday game Burnley and West Bromwich Albion. To put it in MLS terms, it's kind of like having Montreal versus Chivas as your nationally televised game of the week. West Brom won 4-0, and to make matters worse, the NFL played a Dolphins-Raiders game in London that night, local time, meaning English fans not only had to sit through one blowout game between two terrible teams, they then had to sit through another blowout game between two terrible teams. Yellow card and social media fail of the week to Polish-born German international Lukas Podolski. Despite winning the World Cup this year, he can't seem to find any playing time at Arsenal, giving him a lot of time to sit on the bench and flip through X-rated pictures on Instagram. Some eagle-eyed fans noticed that his Instagram likes from during Arsenal's 1-1 draw with Tottenham included some rather racy images, leading us to wonder if the Emirates Stadium isn't the only place he isn't seeing any action. Hey, we make fun of the guy. We make fun of the guy, but he's getting paid $173,000 a week to sit on the sideline and look at porn on his phone. The joke's on us. Yellow card to FedEx Field, home of the Washington racial slurs of the NFL, and that part is bad enough. But to make matters worse, remember all those special World Cup edition bottles Bud Light released a few months ago? Yeah, they're still selling them. In all of their skunky goodness at $7 a pop. One fan at Thursday's game between the racial slurs and the New York Giants noticed that his World Cup branded Bud Light had a bottling date in early June. Punch that date into trackyourbud.com and you'll be told it's no longer fresh. And for a team whose name is an epithet against Native Americans, I wouldn't trust their blankets either. Yellow card to the fans of Brazilian club Palmeiras, who despite a long and illustrious history, just aren't getting it done right now. So basically the Brazilian Liverpool. But after last week's 6-0 loss away at Goiás, fans who made the 500-mile trip from Sao Paulo waited for the team's arrival back at their hotel and then threw rocks and bottles at the team bus. Sure, damage their vehicle and make sure they can't get to the next game. That'll turn their season around. Yellow card to Wikipedia, the latest to jump onto the let's all kiss Derek Jeter's ass in every way we can bandwagon. Jeter played the final game of his impressive but completely overblown career on Saturday. Or Sunday, rather. And what was the featured article on Wikipedia's homepage that day? Why, Derek Jeter, of course! Look, Jeter was a very good player for a very long time, but from the endless media saturation about his farewell season, you'd think we were witnessing the return of the Messiah. Actually, that would impress me. Come on, Jeter, you might have gotten 3,000 hits in your career, but I want to see you do something miraculous. Turn water into wine, heal a leper, come to Columbus and feed the Nordeca with one Papa John's pizza. Even I'll buy a t-shirt. Yellow card to Nikki Mpofu. She is the mistress of Newcastle United midfielder Chiek Tiote. And she's furious that the Ivory Coast international has taken a second wife. Tiote, who has two children with his first wife and one with his mistress, decided that he just doesn't have enough bills to pay and married Letitia Ducru in August. And Miss Mpofu is mad, saying he's treating her like a mop. Which, by which I presume he keeps her in the closet and only brings her out when he's feeling dirty, which is pretty much what a mistress is, last I checked. Look, despite Tiote being a devout Muslim and thus allowed multiple wives, polygamy is not only banned in the UK, but in Tiote's home country, the Ivory Coast, as well. Breaking news, check Tiote to sign with Real Salt Lake. Yellow cards all around. It'll sink in. Yellow cards all around to Chelsea manager Jose Mourinho and Aston Villa's Paul Lambert and Roy Keane, who were all responsible for an awkward moment near the end of their match on Saturday, which I don't remember the score of, and as far as I'm concerned, never happened. Mourinho went in to give Lambert and Keane a post-match handshake before heading down the tunnel, but he didn't even wait until the final whistle. I guess he was just trying to beat the London traffic. Lambert and Keane were less than amused and didn't return the gesture, nor did they even get up from their seats, which gave them more face time on TV and gave me more time to throw things at the TV. Speaking of the idiot box, yellow card to the TV station in Madrid who called Luis Suarez overweight in the build-up to the first meeting of the season between Barcelona and Real Madrid, which will mark Suarez's return after being banned from soccer for biting at the World Cup. Now, the game isn't for another month or so, but the Madrid media got their shots in early, calling him, quote, fatter than usual, end quote. A newspaper the following day even suggested that he was being put on a special diet to prepare him for his return, cutting back on the Italian subs, I'm guessing. Barcelona manager Luis Enrique, to his credit, responded to the reports by saying, quote, we'll put him on liposuction if you want, end quote. If it's suction he needs, maybe they'll send him back to Liverpool. And finally, a red card and one that you can do something about. Red card to the jackasses in the Cincinnati area who stole a trailer containing $30,000 worth of soccer equipment belonging to a group called On Goal. Now, these guys run camps and club teams that give kids from all over the Midwest a chance to play soccer and become better athletes and better people for it. They take time out to volunteer and become positive role models for kids in their area, and they need help. I do not often do this, plugging outside causes or whatever on the show, but if you're able to make a donation to these guys to help recoup the cost of the stolen equipment, please do. Head to GoFundMe.com/SupportOnGoalMinistries. They've raised $1,600 so far, but there's a long, long way to go. And I should point out that the campaign was started by a Cincinnati Saints supporters group. It was brought to the attention of the Massive Report by supporters of Detroit City, and one of them is married to a Chicago Fire blogger. In other words, everyone is coming together to try and help these guys out, and we can do this too. Whether you're here in Columbus or wherever you are listening, if you can chip in, they would appreciate it. I'm sure the kids would too. GoFundMe.com/SupportOnGoalMinistries, all one word. My name is Greg Benson. You can find me on Twitter as Gregulator614. Facebook is That One Guy Greg. And if you're at Hendock's Pub, you're in my seat. Play on, but remember, I'm watching you.
Yeah, it's seriously disappointing. Like, it's disappointing about the fact that I have heard that story so many times about some a-hole breaking into a youth, whatever sport it is, trailer, and either stealing it, stealing everything from it, or just absconding with it. That's a huge thing, and definitely a good cause to support. So anybody can kick in a couple of bucks. It's a great cause. It's getting a lot of kids into something that's much better than what they might have gotten into. And on goal, you know, good on you. Hope everything comes out for the best as far as that goes. You know, appreciate it. I don't think Sam has turned anyone else's mic up other than mine.
Well, I hope mine was on, because otherwise I've just talked for 7 minutes to myself.
It was because I'm
communicating with our guest for the next segment.
Oh, that's fantastic.
That just tied me up for a second.
Well, welcome our guest for the next segment, who can't hear me right now, but
because he's not on yet.
Oh, he's not on yet. Okay, that's fair. Sam's confusing.
We all come prepared.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so...
I need like 4 extra set of arms, so I don't want to hear it.
Tom, get down there and give him some arms.
I thought you were going to tell me to give him something else. I was really worried.
No, he doesn't need that much help.
No.
I'm good at a lot of things. I'm just letting you know.
All I'm going to say there is Abby loves him very much. That's all I'm going to say, and we're done with that conversation. They have 2 beautiful children and an amazing marriage. Tom, stop being a homewrecker.
I'm doing the let's move along signal in the air now.
So the MLS Players Union, by the way, we're joined by Ira Harper. How you doing? And this is your first foray into actually being on the show, isn't it?
Yes.
And we kind of made you do this, didn't we?
You completely made me do this.
That's
and
fantastic.
She's not showing any nerves at all.
No, not nerves. No, she's totally cool, calm and collected. The first thing I want to talk about, the MLS Players Union finally releasing some salaries.
That was nice.
Which, yeah, it's
with
been a little
weeks
while.
To go
exactly.
In the regular
season. It's usually there's been like 3 releases of salaries at this point. It's more of a situation where I think the CBA coming up in the off season is going to be, you know, is apparently some sort of sticking point. Apparently, apparently, the fact that they have to negotiate with management makes them not want to talk about money all that much until they have to go to the bargaining table. But let's talk about this, because we got a few things with the crew. You know, we've got we'll kind of call, for lack of a better term, even though he got paid way more than this, because it's actually a phrase used, the Mendoza line. Is $48,825. That's kind of where the majority of the salaries are, or below. So
that's like the median.
Yeah, it really is. It's more the mode. Okay. It's where most of the salaries are.
Right.
So anything above that is kind of what I'm going to note, or what I'm going to note here.
There are a lot of listeners who might not know what that
mode
Mendoza
mode
line
means
refers.
Most.
Well, I know what mode means. where the term Mendoza line comes from.
Well, help them out.
Well, there was a guy who used to play for the crew named Mendoza.
Yes.
I don't remember his first name, though.
Andreas.
Andreas. I completely spaced.
But Andreas Mendoza made a lot more than the Mendoza
Sebastian
line.
Sebastian Latou Samuel in the last segment, so anyway. I have no idea. I'm sorry.
We'll just run away from this super quick. Guys you'd be surprised are making kind of the mode salary for the crew. Bernard Winor, about $48,000 a year. Jairo Arrieta, $135,000, which kind of makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Let's see here.
He tries to collect that a lot earlier than he should.
Steve Clark. This I thought was a steal, and I think Ira would probably agree with this as well, just with what the normal league salary is. Steve Clark only $135,000. That to me is a super low salary for someone performing that well.
Well, we talked about this in the first segment as much as a bargain as it is.
It super is. It definitely is.
I think Steve Clark not only wins in play on the field, but I think he wins with the fans in the stands too, right, Ira?
Yeah.
Aww.
Damn it! Even I tried and it didn't work.
I know. She's new. She's embarrassed. We're gonna work this out. It's gonna be totally.
All of
fun.
A sudden, her hair, her face is matching the color of her hair.
It really is. It's kind of adorable.
It's true, though. Real quick about Clark is as far as you said, Sam, about winning the fans over. The last home game that I was at that I didn't have to work was the Chivas game, I think it was. And as we got closer and closer to the final whistle, we weren't just looking forward to, hey, the final whistle, the Crew have officially won this game. We're looking forward to Steve Clark running over to the Nordeca doing the yes, 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 point into the sky. That pretty much gives you an idea of how...
And I think the more
into him we are, really.
Yeah, the more he's done it after every game, the more people stay after the game just to do that.
Yeah,
because
I agree.
it's become one of the most unified, unisoned chants in the Nordeca ever.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Let's look at a couple other things because we've got Waylon Francis, $125,000. Kind of everybody assumed that was going to be kind of the general area there.
You want a surprise one?
What's that?
Look at Hector Jimenez.
He's not even on there.
Radio is Matt's
nope, he's on here.
He's on here.
Oh, it starts with a J.
Spanish is not your forte.
It's not. $75,000.
Yeah,
Hector Jimenez.
Justin Miram was the big surprise.
Super tiny.
You
want to
talk about a bargain for what you're getting for
Justin Miram, 67,000.
For what you're getting for the money this year with his production and the way that he's playing.
Which I think in the next probably maybe not next show, but the one after, I think that's going to play probably partially in how we look at protection lists.
Oh,
when it comes
course.
To the expansion mm-hmm. draft.
That's a huge thing. That's a seeing what salaries
I don't think making. The salaries are going to play as much a role
they
this
will
time
play
around,
a bit.
But not nearly as much as it used to. I think salaries used to be to play a much bigger bit back when Hunts owned the team.
But it also depends on how long the contract is and what happens with the CBA.
That is true.
Because the whole thing is the collective bargaining agreement, if it gets thrown out and it's completely different.
And everything starts from scratch.
Exactly. The salaries or the contracts that are already signed are still valid. And
yes.
So you might be able to get some steals there and nobody can really do anything about it.
Yeah.
You know. Couple other notable items. Michael Parkhurst... $300,000 guaranteed, which for a national team player for me seems kind of low.
It does seem low. I mean, you look at him compared to the other salaries on the Crew roster, and you're like, okay, it's high money, but yeah, for a guy who was in the preliminary squad in the 30 before they whittled it down before the World Cup,
that's the other thing we're gonna point out here. Pogatetz, $372,000. We haven't even seen him play.
I was going to say we really don't have any frame of reference.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
But
it's interesting.
Let's look at the other contrast of this. Look at Giancarlo Gonzalez.
Mm-hmm.
He's actually being paid or was getting paid less than I think any of us expected.
Oh yeah, no.
If you're wondering, Giancarlo Gonzalez was a total compensation of $243,000.
And again, we made this.
And we sold him for how much?
For a player of his caliber, that's
super low.
We made this a little bit of a
hobby horse of ours.
Yeah.
As far as
a very effective
how much
hobby horse for that matter.
Well, as far as what we got for him in exchange for, first of all, what we shelled out to get him in the first place.
Yeah. The other things.
Smart business, and it turns out he was a pretty darn good player too.
The other things I want to bring up real quick: $175,000 for Tony Chani. Which at the beginning of the season would have made me cry myself to sleep.
Yeah, I
would have made me cry myself to sleep at this point. I get it. It's Greg Berhalter. You've made me a believer.
Yeah.
He's the Tony Whisperer. I will eat every single negative thing I ever said about Tony Chani. I will eat him as far as that goes.
You'll eat him.
I won't do that.
That's a big boy. I'm not sure.
You might need a doggy bag for a little.
Will Trapp, which I get, 152,000 franchise tag, local guy. Makes sense.
I wish I was making that money. I think
in the great scheme of things, I think we look at these salaries now compared to previous years, and we're like, yeah, some of these are a little bit low, but most of them seem pretty sensible. I think
they make
in
sense.
Previous years, we've seen some outrageous contracts that really shouldn't have ever kind of existed.
Oh, God, I know. Yeah.
And I think that, if nothing else, look at – I hope this gives a look at how this new ownership is to a certain degree dealing with how it manages its money. Yeah. How it manages its salary, how it manages its roster.
Yeah, I mean, it's you've got guys on the LA Galaxy making more than the entire career roster.
Yeah.
You know,
you've got guys in New York making more than
they've yeah, of course. I just roster. It happened yeah. to be the first one I scrolled down to.
Mostly because the cost of living in an apartment in LA is more than one city block in Columbus.
That is also true. But what I'm saying is that you've got these guys who are making this, and I'm not saying they don't deserve it. I mean, obviously, LA is a bigger market. LA is a much more lucrative market. But at the same time, the Crew are literally one win away from second place in the East.
Yeah.
You know, we are essentially. I don't know, because I've not had the conversation with him, whether or not Greg Berhalter is trying to play a little money ball here. But at the same time, it seems to be that he's not, you know, they're not overextending, but they're paying for what they need to pay for.
Are we looking at Moneyball as a case of Yankees versus Twins or Royals, or are we looking at it as Europe versus MLS? Because, I mean, even in MLS, yeah, as much as the bigger market teams are favored a little bit, it's not really quite Moneyball. But if you know where to send your scouts, which the Crew actually have one.
That's
now.
What I'm saying. Is it's
you
more,
know,
it's more
not necessarily
Yankees
a money
Twins.
Ball as much as you're kind of uncovering those not pieces left over from other teams, but you're kind of uncovering almost basically new talent.
Yeah, well, you're uncovering deals, which is the reason we're able to turn a defender around that we paid hardly anything for and sell him for $5 million.
That's right.
This year, I mean that's huge. In the Crew scouting network. Is a giant boon to this team, because if you don't have that, a lot of the season doesn't happen. A lot of 08 doesn't happen, you know. And that's something that's kind of the unsung heroes of a lot of the Columbus.
As far as bang for your buck is concerned, the Crew are kind of getting out of their players what we as fans get out of the Crew. Because when you think about the other sporting options in Columbus, you think about the cost of what it takes to get into an OSU football game. You think about the ticket price of a Jackets game in the lower bowl or whatever. Yep. And you think
nobody
about
sits in the lower bowl. Those are robots.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Well, yeah, those are robots.
They're not people. They're not real people. Okay. Yeah. Well,
only
theoretically, if you
people.
Were a robot, what you would pay for... Anyway, getting completely back on track. as far as what you would pay for all of these tickets, for all of these other sporting events, even to travel out of town and go to a Browns or a Bengals game or something like that.
Yeah, of course.
And then to come to Columbus and to go to a Crew game and get in for $20-25 if you know where to shop, like for the Nordecker or whatever. As far as what they're putting on the field right now, what have they won? Four straight at home. Mm-hmm. Is it four or five?
Five straight at home.
Five straight at home. I've lost count. That's a beautiful thing to be able to say, that we've lost count of how many consecutive games at home that they've won. How many of us have been able to say that? So, we're getting a maximum return as fans. They're getting a maximum return for not much investment on the field.
So I'm going to put her on the spot again, because we were going to bring her on the show just because it's fun. But you've been at the majority of these games, Ira. And you haven't gone to a lot of Crew games before this. What are your thoughts as far as just, you know, the last few games, and somebody who's was a casual fan beforehand? What are your thoughts as far as just somebody kind of getting into this and somebody who's trying to go forward?
I just think it's really exciting to be able to
I don't know, I guess become an actual Crew fan while we're on the rise.
Yeah.
It's just really easy to get excited for home games, especially being able to go to them and see us win every time for 5 weeks in a row, or yeah. five home games in a row.
Everybody gets that.
Right.
I think that's more timing than anything.
Right. You know, a lot of people had that same timing in 08.
Totally. And that was something that gave us kind of a big ride there as far as that goes. So cool. Yeah. All right. We're going to come back in a few minutes here. Going to talk a little Columbus Crew, New England Revolution. We've got a special guest in the next segment. That's going to be super cool as well. One of the editors for Fox Soccer and Inside MLS, Kyle McCarthy, who's the Revs beat writer for New England Soccer Journal and Boston Herald. It's all coming up next. This is the Massive Report.
Trust, we'll say nothing to no one, no how, or we bust and never crack a smile, or flinch or cry, but nobody, We'll give your ID card to the border guard, yeah, your alien says you got it, Jean-Luc Picard, the United Federation of Planets, the C1.
Segment four. This is the Massive Report. My name is Matt Goschert, joined with Ira Harper and Greg Benson, also Sam Fahmy, turning the gears. Thanks so much to our guest for this segment, talking about the New England Revolution, Kyle McCarthy, the Revs beat writer for New England Soccer Journal, the Boston Herald, and one of the editors for Fox Soccer and Inside MLS. That's an impressive resume, sir. How you doing tonight?
Well, it's certainly crowded. That much I can tell you. I'm doing very well, thanks. How are you?
Cool. I'm doing well. It's good to have you on the show, man. It has been a really bunched up playoff race in the East. Kind of give me the thoughts on what's going on from a Revs side here.
Well, the Revs are looking at it from the standpoint of there's still a lot left for them to do at this stage because everything's so bunched up. I mean, there's no separation like in the Western Conference. So everything's on the table. You could finish top of the Eastern Conference, or you could slide out entirely. So for the Revs, they're sort of focused on moving upwards after the victory at Sporting Kansas City on Friday.
Yeah, that was a great match. I think the Revs played very well there. They've had a good season so far. The one thing that I definitely point to, you know, you look at the separation between DC and everybody else in the league, and you say, okay, whatever. I mean, DC's only won one more match than the Revs have. They're sitting kind of, I don't know if I'd say comfortably at this point because of the way that the rest of it shakes out, but what's kind of the thought of the fan base? What's kind of the vibe up there with they're in second place, but it's a precarious second place at this point?
It's been an interesting season here in New England. Revs have been very streaky. They had a really good spell in April and May, and then they lost eight straight to really call into question a lot of the stuff that was going on. And then Jermaine Jones arrives, then the Revs perk up again, and all of a sudden they're back in second place in the Eastern Conference. So I think the lesson so far this season for the Revs is the need to stay consistent. They need to find a way to prolong the streak and really enter the postseason on a high, because that's the goal. It's not just getting into the postseason, it's doing something once they get there.
Kyle, a couple of things. Does this crew slash Revs series back and forth and this kind of weird bunched up scheduling in the end of the season, does it kind of remind you back of 2008 when they were battling for the Supporters Shield?
Yeah, it's different now, obviously. I mean, it's a whole new sort of scenario, but when you look at where the Revs are, that's the sort of fight that they'd like to be in. It's been a while since the Revs have had the opportunity to look back to the upper reaches of the Eastern Conference table, and I think this year has allowed them to dream a little bit, and I think that's a good step forward for the club.
One more thing, the Revs came into Crew Stadium last week having won 5 straight, then they drop the result here in Columbus, but yet they bounce right back. What kind of feeling has that given the fans about the ability of this team to possibly make it far into the playoffs?
I think that performance in Sporting Kansas City went a long way to assuaging some doubts, certainly. The performance in Columbus wasn't good, and you have to credit the Crew for a good display. You have to credit Federico Higuain for his brilliance on the free kick. But the Revs weren't particularly good on that night, and the fact that they were able to respond quickly against Sporting Kansas City, go into Sporting Park, a place where they hadn't won in this decade, and claim all 3 points, I think it was the sort of response you need from a team that you expect to try and advance deep into the postseason.
Yeah, I hadn't realized that. Had it been that long since the Revs had won in Kansas City?
It has. It's been a house of horrors for the Revs. I mean, when you put it in perspective, they had not defeated Sporting Kansas City in Kansas City since Sporting Kansas City became Sporting Kansas City. I know that's convoluted, but they were still the old Wizards the last time the Revs won in KC. So I think that gives you some perspective about the importance of that game and the meaning of being able to go there and get a result.
It is. I mean, and that certainly helps them get the monkey off their back, especially with as good as Kansas City has been performing. You know, you look at the Revs for the last few seasons compared to where they were, especially when Sam alluded to 08 and before. What's kind of changed in New England? And obviously, they're performing much better than they have been.
Yeah, I think it's the natural evolution in the change of regime, obviously. Steve Nichol going out and Jay Heaps coming in.
Yeah.
Heaps brought in a different philosophy in terms of how he wanted to play and how he wanted to construct his side. It took him a little bit of time to install it and find the players necessary to really make it work. But you've seen a steady growth from this team over the past couple of years, and I think it's really starting to show at this stage where the Revs are a fairly consistent side. They have good understanding of what they want to do, and they do a good job of meeting those standards on a fairly regular basis. Yes, they've been streaky, but they've been streaky in the sense that they also understand always what they're trying to do, and that's been important for them through the highs and the lows.
I mean, much has been made of the Jermaine Jones transfer this year as far as New England getting top spot and allocation, whatever. Skipping over that entirely, how much of a change in attitude among the fans at the very least has Jones coming on board really changed the culture of New England as far as from going to this streaky team you talked about where they win a lot, then they lose a lot, then they win a lot, and then you're looking at the end of the season, hey, we might lose a lot again. What is this one particular acquisition? Has it really made that much of a difference?
It means everything. It really does, because for so long, the Revs have sort of functioned as a team that tried to get the most out of the least. And the fact that the Kraft family was willing to spend that sort of capital to acquire Jermaine Jones and back up some of the statements they had made over the years, it meant a lot. It meant a lot to the team. It meant a lot to the fans. There's still a lot of work to be done with this club. I think there's obviously a focus on the stadium situation, and the Revs do need to get that done to really get over that hump. But the fact that they were able to go out and spend the money on Jermaine Jones really made a difference both on and off the field for this club this season.
Do you have you heard anything new about the stadium situation in New England? Because obviously it's a very large stadium, and it's, you know, we've said this about a few MLS stadiums at this point, but not opportunely located in the Boston market. What have you heard as far as that goes?
It's I haven't heard much, to be honest. I think that's the sort of situation where you're going to have a lot of people meeting behind a lot of closed doors, and all of a sudden there's going to be a stadium that pops out somewhere. That's kind of how business gets done in Boston. I think the recent casino shuffling has really helped. There was a referendum back in Boston a couple of years ago to bring casinos to Massachusetts.
Okay.
And they're just in the middle of trying to sort all that stuff out. And I think the Revs are still interested in doing it, but there hasn't been a lot of public movement on the situation recently.
Kyle, as you look at how I'm not sure if we're the only podcast that ripped the MLS for the way the deal went down with Jermaine Jones, but what was almost kind of like how did you guys feel in Boston about how this Jermaine Jones deal could have gone down, especially because it seemed that he had turned Chicago down, he turned New England down, then there was like certain special incentives if he ends up going to New England.
Yeah, it's one of those situations where I think everyone involved realized it was a little bit screwy. It was a little bit MLS the way everything went down.
Yeah.
But in the end, the Revs got the player, and I think that was what the club officials focused on. I think that's what the supporters focused on. In the end, it's not how you make the sausage. It's what happens at the end, and the Revs are pleased to have Jermaine Jones, and they've been happy with how he's performed since he's arrived.
That's fair.
Do you feel that I think his contract is only a year and a half, is that right?
I believe so. I think it's year and a half guaranteed and then options.
So do you feel that maybe the Kraft family has the confidence in being able to secure him long term? I mean, when I say long term, I know that's not a ton of years because Jermaine Jones is in his 30s right now, right?
Yeah, I think a year and a half guaranteed is reasonable for a player of his age and his caliber. I think he's certainly not coming to MLS for anything less. And in MLS, there are always opportunities to make a deal or figure out a way to move forward. I don't think anyone's thinking that far ahead at this point. I think they're focused on the postseason and making sure that Jones is at his best heading into the playoffs.
All right, so I have a funny question for you and then a serious question for you. The Revs and the Crew are the last two teams to have their original crests from the beginning. The Crew, obviously, we've seen or we've heard are going to be rebranding
about 2 weeks.
On the 8th of October. Give me, as someone from New England, the funniest thing you think could be the new Crew crest.
The funniest thing that could be on the Crew crest.
Wow, way to put him on the spot there, Matt.
Wow. If it was just a head fake and they just updated the Village People.
Now,
instead of a shield looking thing, it'll be a circle thing, but the Village People remain in there.
Exactly. I think that'd be fantastic. So, in parrying off of that before I go into my serious question, if the Revs were to rebrand, what would you want to see in the crest?
That's a good question. I think you would want to keep the ties to the identity of the club. Mm-hmm. But if the Revs are going to rebrand, they're probably going to be in Boston somewhere, and it's probably going to be a little bit more substantial than just a little tweak to the crest. I think if it happens, I think it's going to be a wholesale rejuvenation on the scale of Sporting Kansas City.
Do they keep the colors, though?
Red Sox FC is what you're saying. on record, you're saying Red Sox FC.
No, but certainly it would be something where you rethink everything.
Yeah.
If you're gonna rebrand the Revs, including the name, including whether you put Boston or New England in it, everything would be on the table at that point, I think.
It completely makes sense. So obviously we have the big match this weekend going into Foxborough with this. What are your thoughts on Crew versus New England?
I think it'll be an interesting game. I've enjoyed watching Columbus play this year. I've said it in a couple of different Columbus-based outlets, and I'm happy to say it here. I think that Greg Berhalter's done a good job with the team this year. I think they're playing a good style of soccer, and they're fun to watch. And the intriguing thing about this match is that the way the Crew plays and their willingness to go out and get the ball contrasts nicely with the Revs, who generally look to break quickly when they win it, to try and exploit teams when they're committing numbers forward. So that balance is interesting for me as I'm looking forward to this game at the weekend.
All right.
How do you think the probably the last question here, because they're all kind of looking at me. How do you think this playoff race boils down? What are your five teams from the East that make it in?
Well, let's see. I like DC United. I like New England. I like Sporting Kansas City. I think Columbus will get into the playoffs.
Woo!
I think the home and home with Philadelphia will be tricky. I think the trip to New York will be difficult. But I think Columbus can pull it off. And I think New York will probably make it in as well.
All right. Kyle, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate you having me on.
Unless you're playing Columbus or your team is anywhere in the race against Columbus, good luck to you.
I'm sure the Revs fans will be thrilled with your good tidings.
I know. I'm just giving you a hard time. Thanks so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate it, buddy.
Yeah, have a good one.
You too.
Thanks, Kyle.
All right, so we're going to talk about this for just a second. The Crew obviously play the Revs this weekend on the flubber turf that is Gillette Stadium.
You waited for him to get off the line before you said that.
No, I didn't really. I honestly didn't. I just didn't think of it till right about now. The biggest thing is this is not really something that's, you know, a secret, is that it's the hardest turf in the state or in the league.
Yeah.
I mean, flat out. What do you think, Greg?
I think a lot more is made of the playing surface than what is actually going to become a determining factor in the game. I mean, let's face it.
You have not watched 6 years of the Crew play this damn surface. You've only watched the good times.
I have, but I haven't. I mean, at the same time, I mean, Columbus travels to... They travel to Cascadia. They go play in Portland. They go play in Seattle.
It's not the same.
I'm not saying that all turf is the same. Just like I'm saying, not all grass is the same at all different grass stadiums. Like you play at Crew Stadium, and it's not going to be the same grass as BMO Field in Toronto or BBVA in Houston or whatever. But at the same time, I think a lot more is played up about how much of a factor this is going to be in the outcome of the game.
The biggest thing that I see as far as all that goes is you look at and it's even true with like RFK and a couple of the other stadiums is Gillette reminds me of the old Giants Stadium, and the old Giants Stadium is where in 2008 two games before we go to the playoffs and end up running the playoffs and winning, Andy Greenebaum gets scored on by the other team's goalkeeper because of the moon bounce that this ball takes.
I do remember that.
And
I do remember watching that.
That's the biggest thing to me, is that this is the last of MLS 1.0 as far as stadiums go. And I know it's the second Gillette Stadium that they're in, and it's not a knock on New England at all. It's the stadium they're in. It's the surface you play on, and you've got to learn from that, and you've got to go from that. But it's one of those things where you look at New England, as far as that goes, it's a difficult place to play, especially now in the league when you're not playing on six turf surfaces throughout the year. You're playing at New England, and that's it.
The last thing that I want is for, heaven forbid that this happens, but the Crew wind up dropping this game, and we all point to the surface of the pitch as the reason why it happened. I mean, the point is, I don't want us to get into the mentality of making excuses for why the team didn't deliver.
Look,
it's one of those things that
I think that there has been a history of the Crew when they're getting ready to go and play an important game like that is on turf, to come to, there are a few universities or colleges in the area that have turf fields, and they will go practice there. Now, I think they need to practice there all week. I think they generally practice like 1 or 2 days, but... Turf sucks because the bounce of everything is different. It's hard to change those reactions for 1 week and then try to change them back. So this, I,
I think all of us have played, on turf.
I think what I fear is that in the first 10 or 15 minutes that they're getting used to the bounce, that's when New England is going to score, and then they're going to be chasing the game.
Yeah.
That's my worry.
Right.
So,
yeah, I think if Columbus gets through, as you said, the first 15 or even 20 minutes, and it's still scoreless, or even better, Crew is leading, it holds them in good stead for the rest of the game while they get there. You know, speaking as somebody who grew up in Australia, there's an expression in cricket that we have is when a batsman gets his eye in, and that refers to he's got to face the bowler a few more times. It's like facing a couple pitches from the pitcher before you actually get a feel of where you are and get your bearings on what's where and how can I perform the best. I'm
Sam's
sorry,
making,
Matt. Did I stop talking mid-drink?
No, Sam was making the crunchy turtle hand sign to me, and I wasn't 100% sure what was going on there.
By the way, one thing that I will point out is that you mentioned during that interview, you used the phrase Boston Market, and now I'm really, really hungry.
Yeah. That's why we were laughing at you.
I know.
Yeah. We're all doing hand gestures of... I know nobody can see me doing this besides the people sitting at the table. It's great radio. But
I was eating corn.
He was eating corn.
Boston Market's tasty, and they do a good job.
It's great stuff.
And they're, like, almost extinct, too.
That's a darn shame. I have had their mac and cheese. Okay. I have. I do want to say one thing before we go into score predictions, because I know that's where Sam wants to take us down the line here, because Sam wants to go home because he has a lovely wife and some children that I've been told are nice.
I would say Chris LaMacchia is looking at his Google Watch, but he's not here anymore.
Yeah, and apparently...
When I get my Apple Watch, I'll make sure to look at it.
Sam's got a bidet at home, and so, you know, it's one of those
Once
things.
Once again, which you have mistaken for a water fountain.
I did. No, I totally did mistake it for a water fountain quite a bit. You know why? I'm American, and those things confuse and scare me.
Yes, we found that out.
Yeah, what I do want to ask real quick, just because we have her on, and we said that we were going to pick on her for a little while, and she hasn't really been picked on all that much. So, you've been to the match that you were at this last Saturday. That was your fifth match, Ira.
It was more than your fifth match?
Yeah. Okay. So, thought process as far as that goes. Somebody who's this new into the system and this new and seeing the team win this much. What are your expectations?
I mean, I expect us to go to the playoffs and to kick ass, but not... I don't know.
There's no wrong answer here. I'm literally just... And this is because it's an interesting concept for me.
It's just, I mean, it's really encouraging to see them win this much.
Yeah.
But also they're winning mostly home games, and whenever I think of them going to anywhere else, turf or not, I just kind of...
Scares the crap out of you.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah same here.
So it's really not that different.
So you're echoing all of our sentiments right now.
Exactly. Well, I'm going to put you on the spot, make you do the score prediction for the turf game on Saturday first. Go ahead. All right.
I think it's going to be 2-2.
All right, Sam.
Yeah, I think it's going to be 1-1.
All right, Tom.
6-2.
To who?
I don't know.
Tom
Andre, he knows his soccer.
I've been to one Crew game. It's amazing. These guys are great. And now I'm here.
You're a silly little man.
You're a great man.
All right, Greg, your thoughts.
I'm going 2-1 to the boys in yellow. I think they steal a late one.
Yeah. I remember the last time I really wanted us to win a game at Gillette that I wasn't at. There were football lines on the fucking...
Can we bleep that out later?
Sam won't.
Okay.
On the field, and we won 3-0. I'm going to say 3-0. That's what I'm going to do.
Right.
So that's the show. Sorry, Sam.
We can't take you anywhere.
I know. I do what I can. For Nate and Chris, who left early, Ira and Tom, who filled in their place, kind of. Sam Fahmy, who turned the dials, made the stuff happen tonight. Greg Benson, He's Australian, and that's weird. My name is Matt Goshard. This has been the Massive Report. Coach, nowhere in the rule book does it say anything about jumping too high. Now sit down.